The round of continues on Monday, then, with the second episode in our encore presentation of the series Test Drive. All six episodes written by the award-winning playwright Dave Carley. They star Gordon Pinsent as Earl Hughes, an American Motors car dealer who we follow over five decades. This week's episode is set in 1962. The Cuban Missile Crisis looms over North America, and Earl finds himself faced with an empty car showroom as his customers prepare for war. Here, then, is Missiles and Mennonites, Episode 2 of Test Drive by Dave Carley.
There are two schools of thought on the 1950s. The professors tell us the 50s were a wasteland of bad taste and social evils, whitewashed in two-tone pastel. Okay, they're paid to say stuff like that, because those of us who actually lived through the decade tend to remember it as a happy time, when we were building businesses and families and living lives of relative normalness after the terrible disruptions of the war years. Dorothy and I took over her father's American Motors dealership in 1954, and Curran AMC prospered, mostly because of Dodo's business smarts. Our children, Eleanor, Speedy, as we call her, and Franklin, both grew like weeds, but were still too young to cause us grief. And we bought a split level in Don Mills. How was any of that bad? But then the 50s ended. The 60s were an altogether different kind of decade. Take the month this story happens, in October 1962. It's been especially nasty. Normally, at this point, I'd stick my paw out to you and say, I'm Earl, Earl Hughes. I sell cars. And then I'd steer you over to one of our new Rambler Classics, which just won the Motor Trend Car of the Year award. But instead, I'm standing here in my showroom, Friday, October 22nd, 1962, and there's not a customer in sight. Why? Everyone's at home, waiting to get blown up.
Oh, where is everyone?
Home, digging bomb shelters.
Well, that would explain that fresh mound of dirt behind the Gillespie's garage.
And Millie Dunham's been canning and preserving like a madwoman all week. Dodo, if people think the Ruskies are going to blow them to smithereens by the weekend, they aren't going to feel the need for a brand new Rambler.
Well, if they had one iota of self-respect, they would. You don't want to meet your maker with a rust bucket in the garage.
Well, you have to hand it to Speedy. Our resident Cassandra is looking pretty smart right about now.
Speedy is a nut.
Dodo.
Well, she is.
Well, you can't call your own daughter a nut.
Oh, I can, and I did. She should be doing her homework or going on dates with nice boys, not playing house in a bomb shelter. Oh, how on earth did I get a daughter like that?
Why don't you come to my office, and I'll remind you.
Oh, Earl, we're at work.
Who's working? We haven't seen a customer in 3 hours. No one will see us.
You know, if anyone had told me you'd still be this randy after 17 years of marriage, I...
You'd what?
Well, I'd still have married you. But I have a better idea. How about tonight, when the kids are in bed, we could sneak downstairs, we could see what it's like in the, Speedy bunker?
Don't we have to ask Speedy for permission?
Oh, it's our house.
It's her bunker.
A brief note here on the origin of names. Speedy's real name is Eleanor, after Eleanor Roosevelt, of course. But she got the name Speedy two ways. The official story, the one you're getting, is she couldn't wait to be delivered at the hospital. She made her appearance in the back seat of my father-in-law's Nash as we dashed to East York General. That was back in winter, 1946. Almost everything Speedy has done since birth has belied her name. She's a thoughtful, studious girl who likes nothing better than to settle down in the hammock with a thick novel. But last year, she began reading all the literature the emergency measures people have been putting out. And she badgered and badgered me until I cemented the floor and walls of our basement crawl space, according to specs she'd found in the library. And as international tensions have escalated over Cuba, she's poured her energies into preparing our shelter, which we've come to call the Speedy Bunker.
Speedy should be dating boys.
You'd kill her.
No, I wouldn't.
You'd kill them.
Oh, she's 17, and to the best of my knowledge, she hasn't been on one single date. She's always reading. You don't get dates reading. Girls get dates by watching boys do things, like basketball.
Oh, listen to yourself.
What?
You never did that.
Well, it doesn't matter what I did.
You couldn't spend 30 seconds watching someone else do something.
It all depends on the boy you're trying to catch. If I'd sat back in high school and watched you do things, I'd have been bored senseless. You mostly doodle pictures of cars. Anyway, if I just watched you, you never would have noticed me. Earl.
What?
I said you never would have noticed me.
That's true.
Earl.
Oh, of course I noticed you. You were the most beautiful girl at Riverdale High.
Oh.
Ravishing. I was so ravished, I couldn't get the courage up to ask you out. Oh, that was a compliment.
You're such a bad liar. It drives me crazy. I was the only girl at Riverdale High with her own car. That's why you noticed me.
Hmm.
Oh, Earl, I just want Speedy to be happy. And I don't think all this atom bomb gloom and doom stuff is helping. It's so negative. She'd be so much happier if she just had a boyfriend making her miserable. Why don't you go and have a talk with her?
I found Speedy in her bomb shelter. She was wallpapering it in a vivid floral pattern.
Oh, that's very nice, Speedy.
I got a deal at the hardware. I told them they were getting vaporized on Monday, so why not give it to me half price? They couldn't dispute the logic. And the flowers will remind us of the beauty of nature, because believe me, after next week, there will be no nature to speak of. Hey, guess what? Franklin finally got the air exhaust working. Flip the switch.
Okay, where's the...
Right there. It's a bit loud, but we'll get used to it. The used air comes out at the bottom of the garden. I just haven't figured out where the new air comes from yet.
Speedy?
Yes, Dad?
Speedy, I think we should start calling you Eleanor.
I like Speedy.
Well, I know, but some people might think it's strange.
Why?
It's not a young woman's kind of a name. It's cute for a kid, but you're 17 now.
Nobody's ever found it strange before.
Well, maybe a nice boy would.
What nice boy? Oh. Oh, I know what you're getting at. You think I'll get a date if I'm an Eleanor, not a Speedy. You've been talking to Mom.
No.
Daddy, you're such a bad liar.
Okay. She thinks you should go watch boys play basketball.
Why would I spend my last hours on the planet watching a bunch of smelly guys playing stupid basketball?
You'd rather wallpaper a bomb shelter?
What else does Mom say I'm doing wrong?
She says you should stop taking public transit.
She really said that?
Well, no, that's what I think. It sets a bad example for the general public if the daughter of a car dealer is seen on a bus.
But I like the bus.
I didn't hear that.
And I love the subway.
Oh, now you're just being perverse. Honey, isn't the fall semi-formal coming up?
So?
So, don't you want to go to it?
No.
I hear they're holding it at Casa Loma. Oh, Speedy, stop for a second. Turn and look at me. Stop wallpapering, Speedy. Now look at me. Be honest.
Sometimes I think about it. Darlene and Lori are going, but that's because Darlene's brother forced two guys to ask them. Franklin's too little to force some guy to ask me.
Boys don't need forcing to ask you out.
Dad, trust me on this. No one will ask me.
Then for Pete's sake, do what your mother did. Ask a boy out yourself.
Mom went out with guys?
No, me.
She asked you out on a date?
It was a Sadie Hawkins dance. I never would have asked her out in a million years. I was scared to death of her.
Plus, I can just imagine what her idea of a good time would be. She'd try and sell you a car.
Speedy, show respect.
Sorry.
Anyway, she had her own car, a 39 Nash Ambassador 8 convertible coupe. Fender skirts, radio, cigar lighter, bed convert. Oh, it was something. Honey, unfortunately, most men need convincing. They're really good ones, like me. They sort of need to be clubbed over the head and dragged back to the cave.
Well, I've got the Speedy bunker. I could drag one in here.
I wasn't meaning to be literal. Will you think about it, Eleanor?
Okay, I'll think about it. And Daddy?
Yes?
I still want to be called Speedy.
Okay.
It's who I am. And Daddy?
Yes, Speedy?
I've got 40 bottles of water in the garage that have to be brought down. Do you mind? And Mrs. Dunham has a case of peach preserve she's giving us.
Speedy wasn't being entirely truthful with me. There were, in fact, boys she liked at school. But a month ago, she'd painted herself into a corner of squaredom from which she could never emerge.
Today's presentation is by Speedy Hughes, and it's on...
Emergency readiness. Thank you, Mr. Cooper. My fellow classmates, in one short second, you could be a pile of ash, about a half shoebox worth. Mr. Cooper, maybe a whole shoebox.
Thanks, Speedy.
The Russians have hundreds of atom bombs aimed at New York City and Washington. And if just one of them falls short, guess where it lands? Right here. Don Mills, Toronto. Mr. Cooper, can you pull down the world map, please?
Mm-hmm.
You see, we're right on the bomb trajectory. Look at the map. They launch from the Ural Mountains there. The bombs arc over the Northwest Territories, Hudson Bay, down... Oh, no, I'm running out of gas. I'm going to hit... Don Mills. And thus, we are all atomic toast. I wouldn't laugh if I were you, but with a little foresight, we can avoid tragedy. I've run off a basic bomb shelter design on the Gestetner.
Class.
Darlene, can you hand them around? Well, let's talk about nutrition. You actually don't need a lot to survive. A few unprocessed staple foods is all. If you learn how to prepare and use whole grain wheat or corn, and beans, you can use beans. I've made a list.
Class.
Remember, all your food sources must come from before the bomb drops. Soybeans are good. Do that. Please listen to me.
Oh, another day of no customers. How did your talk with Speedy go?
Fine. She'll think about dating. Toto, do you think that's a customer?
Well, just a kid. Probably wants a used. You deal with him.
Sure. Hello. Hello, son. Can I help you?
Yes. Yes, you can.
I'm Earl. Earl Hughes.
Dan Burkholder.
Are you looking for a trade-in?
Got nothing to trade.
Oh.
Unless you take horses.
No horse trading here. What's that?
Earl! There's a goddamn horse in the lot!
Oh, it's mine. Chum.
Chum?
That's the horse's name.
It's okay, Dodo. It's the customers. You really don't want to trade Chum for a car, do you?
No. That was a joke. I want to buy a new car.
Well, you're in the right place. What do you fancy?
Something plain.
Plain?
You look surprised.
Well, I've never actually sold anything before by calling it plain. And I certainly never expected someone your age to want something plain. Fellows like you want something powerful, something you can soup up, not plain.
Oh, but that's why I came here. American Motors cars are the plainest around.
Don't ever let my wife hear you say that.
Why aren't there any other customers?
It's the Cuban thing.
What Cuban thing?
You don't know? Okay, plain. I guess our most economical car, the basic one, the plainest one, is the Rambler American. Take a look at the four-door sedan here. Well, yeah, now that I look at it, it's real plain. But don't take my word on it. I'll call Dorothy over. Dodo, can you come over here a moment?
Oh, yes, Earl. Coming.
Just want to get your opinion on something.
Sure. Hello.
This is Dan Burkholder. He owns the horse. But now he wants a plain car. I was telling him that the Rambler American is the epitome of plain.
Earl, have you lost your mind? The American is a sexy, cute car. And a young lad driving the, convertible model with vinyl bucket seats, which recline all the way back, he'd have to fight the girls off with a broom.
No, that's not the right answer.
There isn't a plainer car around, just four wheels on a box. Why do you want plain?
Well, it's my only hope that they'll go for it.
Who's they?
My parents. Does the chrome come off? I knew a family once that took the chrome off. My dad still won't speak to them, but that was 10 years ago. Maybe he's changed.
I'm missing something here. Did your dad stop speaking to them because they wrecked the look of a car? Because although I don't condone vandalizing cars, not talking to someone over a bit of chrome is pretty drastic.
We're Mennonites.
Oh.
Well, that explains the hoss and my lot.
Chum.
We're what you'd like to call old order. There's a colony of us south of Markham. We're strict. My father's just about the strictest. My brother, he moved to Waterloo and bought a tractor. Dad doesn't speak to him. But he might change. Maybe if I can show them this car and ask them to imagine it without the chrome around the side, he might accept it. It's nearly impossible to drive a buggy into Markham now. They need a car.
Well, bring them in. I'll have that thing looking as plain as Pat Nixon's cloth coat.
As what?
Just an expression.
Well, you see, they'll never come into the city. I've got to take the car to them. Could we take it for a test drive?
Well, sure.
I mean, to the farm.
What about old Chum?
Oh, I'll tie him to a tree. He'll be fine.
Dorothy, do we have any trees?
There's one out back. I'll get him a pail of water. Oh, Dan, before I go, one question. Why do you want a car? Is it just because the traffic's getting too bad for horses?
I guess I want a car because it's a car.
That's reason enough.
I tossed the keys to Dan. He tossed them right back. He'd never driven. So this was going to be a precedent-setting test drive. I would do all the driving. And once we got back to his farm, he would do the selling.
You really would take the chrome off? I don't mean to be disrespectful, but where does it say in the Bible that cars can't have chrome?
It's vain. Prideful.
Will your parents go for a car radio?
No chance. Once I rode into Markham and bought a radio, Dad threw it in the fire. I went back and bought a transistor. I hide it under my floorboard. I listen at night.
What kind of music do you like?
Beach Boys, Jan and Dean, surfing stuff.
You and my daughter.
I listen to Chum, so that's what I called my horse.
He really burned the radio?
Yeah. That was 2 years ago. Maybe he's changed.
Dan, I don't like to rain on a possible sale, but nothing your father's done recently is giving me much hope he's going to go for this car.
Well, Dad doesn't want anything to change, but the city's almost surrounding us now. Something's going to have to give. Can I try the radio?
Sure.
It doesn't. Christia still has not given the Americans a response. Meanwhile, in Havana, Fidel Castro...
Sorry. I can't bear to listen anymore to the Cuba thing. It's killing my business.
What's going on?
Well, there's a big problem with them having nuclear weapons.
People are really worried.
My daughter's built a bomb shelter.
How will I know when the bomb drops?
Either Chum will interrupt the Beach Boys, or you'll hear the boom.
Well, that'll get me off the farm.
Is that what this is really about?
What?
You want to leave home?
Every time I see a car go by. Where'd it come from? Where's it going? How come it's going somewhere and I'm not? There's our lane.
The laneway was just two ruts up to a, well, I have to say, a very plain frame farmhouse. The house was so plain that our rambler American looked kind of garish alongside it. Dan went inside. I amused myself by thinking about farms, sitting in that barnyard, which was so peaceful. I couldn't imagine a nuclear war ever happening. And yet I don't much like farms. I know they're necessary, but to my mind, their chief value is that they're out of the city, and if you want to get to one, you have to own a car. Next, I thought about Mennonites, especially Dan's variety, and it occurred to me that not owning a car is perverse. It's about as perverse as Speedy enjoying public transit. Next, it occurred to me that maybe I saw the world through a very unique kind of four-wheeled prism. And then the farmhouse door flew open and Dan stalked out. He was carrying a pillowcase stuffed with clothes, his transistor, and a Bible.
Let's go.
Are you okay?
No.
What's that stuff?
He told me to leave, so that's what I'm doing.
We drove back to the dealership in silence.
How'd it go with the folks?
Not well. Dan got the boot.
They threw you out for wanting a car?
Wasn't just the car, ma'am. My father and I have been fighting for years. The car was just the final straw. I'm very sorry for wasting your time.
What will you do now?
I don't know. I'm a free man. Whatever that means.
I left Dan with his horse and yanked Dodo behind a 1960 Ambassador Country Club four-door hardtop with a V8.
What do we do?
What do you mean, what do we do?
What do we do about Dan?
He's not our problem.
He's got nowhere to go.
Well, he can get a room. That's all. Why?
What, he's going to ride chum downtown? And how will he pay for a room? I doubt he has two nickels to rub together. I don't even think he owns a wallet. Dodo, he's coming home with us.
Oh, he's not.
Dodo, in the 17 years we've been married, I haven't asked you for much, but I am telling you this. I'm not leaving that lad in the lurch. If he was good enough to sell a car to an hour ago, he's good enough to come home with us. End of discussion.
By the time we'd driven home, Dorothy had figured out that Dan could use the pullout in the rec room and Chum could graze behind the garage for a few days until the neighbors complained. And given that everyone was worried about the bomb, we likely had a grace period. Bringing Dan to Don Mills was a bit like introducing the Encino Man to modern society. He stood on our front walk and gazed at our split level with reverence. The fact that he was actually going to stay in a place with electricity, three radios, one TV, a dishwasher, running water, and a garage with an automatic door filled him with overwhelming awe. And something else filled him with awe as well. Speedy. Actually, it was mutual awe. Speedy took one look at Dan. He took one look at her. And it was like there was a 500-piece Mennonite violin orchestra hovering over Don Mills. Okay, maybe there's no such thing as a Mennonite string orchestra, but there was definitely music in the air.
You're making preserves.
Applesauce.
For when the bomb drops.
Yes. How did you know?
I just guessed. I think it's a really good idea.
You do?
To be prepared. When I was young, I used to help my mother preserve.
You did?
Yes. I waxed the tops and sealed the jars.
You did?
Uh-huh. Can I watch you?
Watch me? Oh, yes. And then, if you want to do the waxing, I'll watch you.
Okay, it's all my fault. But first, a couple of things didn't happen. The Russians caved to the Americans' pressure and no bombs dropped. And Dan didn't move out. He came in every day with us to Curran AMC, starting as a janitor. The passing of the Cuban crisis didn't dampen Speedy's ardor for emergency preparation. And in fact, she seemed to be redoubling her efforts in the bomb shelter. She said bombs often fell when you least expected them. One Sunday, Dodo and I came home from church, and no one answered our hello. All was quiet on the basement front, way too quiet. Dodo looked at me, I looked at her, and we rushed down to the bomb shelter. And there they were. Still clothed, mercifully, but very, very horizontal.
Speedy.
Dan.
Hi, Mom.
Speedy.
Sir,
it's Earl.
Speedy, I'm surprised at you.
It's okay, Mom.
It's not okay. It looks like we got here in the nick of time.
But we're engaged.
You're what? You can't be. You're too young. That's ridiculous. Earl, say something. Tell her it's ridiculous. She's only 17.
Oh, Mrs. Hughes, my parents got married at 17.
I asked Earl to say something, not you. You oversexed Mennonite.
Dorothy.
Mom.
Well.
We were married pretty young.
That's not the point. We've just come home and found our daughter in a darkened bomb shelter shamelessly being shameless.
What's so bad about it? Dad said you chased him all through high school. That's shameless.
Speedy.
Earl?
Oh, boy.
Earl, you have 3 seconds to correct that.
Correct what?
Who chased who?
I chased you.
Oh. Say it with conviction. Speedy, you're a smart and pretty girl, and you don't need to chase boys. And you especially shouldn't be down in bomb shelters with them. It leads to things happening.
Like sex?
Yeah, yes, S-E-X.
Which leads to what? Oh, right, it leads to girls named Speedy.
I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't think you need to talk about it in front of Dan.
Oh, that's okay, Mrs. Hughes. She's already told me. It happens in our community, too. We call it bundling.
Mom, I've been able to do basic math since I was 7. I'm not called Speedy because I was born in Grandpa's car on the way to East York General. I'm Speedy because you got married and I was born in Grandpa's car practically on your honeymoon.
True. But it was all your father's fault.
Speedy was, however, only 17. We made them wait a year, but when that passed, they were still determined to marry. I'm Earl. Earl Hughes. I sell cars. But not right now. That's me, standing there in my tux. Yeah, believe it or not, that's me. I look quite handsome, if I do say so myself. And those tears in my eyes are those of a proud father who's about to lose his little girl, even if she is only moving down to the basement. I'm about to walk the speedster down the aisle. That's Dan waiting for her at the front. My son Franklin's his best man. Nobody's here from Dan's family. He's sad about that, but he's got us now, for better and for worse. I should end this by tempering my earlier statements on Mennonites. Yes, Dan's folks shouldn't have kicked him out, and they also should have come to his wedding. On the other hand, they did something right, because their lad has made a great husband for Speedy. And yes, yes, if the whole world suddenly went strict Mennonite on us, it would kill the car industry. But it also occurs to me that in a world consisting of Mennonites, there wouldn't be Cuban Missile Crises and atom bombs and Speedy bunkers. I'd just about give up my car to live in a world like that. Just about.
That was Missiles and Mennonites by Dave Carley, the second in our six-part series, Test Drive. Gordon Pinson was Earl, Jeff Bowes was the young Earl, Deanda Greuter was Dorothy, Andrew Tarbutt Dan, Catherine Fitch was Speedy, Mike Peterson was the newscaster, and Mr. Cooper. Colleen Woods was the associate producer, the recording engineer, Wayne Richards, sound effects by Matt Wilcott. Test Drive was produced and directed in Toronto by Linda Grierson. James Roy, the executive producer. You can have Test Drive on CD for $21 for one episode, $40 for the whole six-part series. Call 416-205-5966. That's all the time we have for the roundup for this afternoon. Tomorrow on the program, a conversation with Sarah Kagan, a recent recipient of the MacArthur Fellowship Award. That's $500,000 worth of award. She's a nurse who's done some groundbreaking work with elderly cancer patients. I'm Bill Richardson. See you tomorrow.